This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Mona Lisa, move closer. I'm scared tonight. I watched the news this evening and there's much to fear. They say a mighty storm is brewing up. The outlying areas burning up. They'll let us know more when they hear.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you live from Trinidad World Recording Studios here in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. Oh, my friends, my heart goes out to all of you as you have been, no doubt, downloading the new Pritchett record, Mark of the Human Hand, listening to the last two podcasts where I sat in this room by myself, mumbling, whispering into a microphone my thoughts on the album because someone else was recording down the hall and I couldn't be too loud. So I hope you enjoyed that. It was a cathartic experience for me. Well, today is a very exciting day here at Trinidad World Recording. We are going back into the vault, revisiting, catching up with an old friend. Any fan worth his salt worldwide is going to know the contributions of original full band members Jason Stolle and Ryan Lynch. Well, today, folks, he is here with us today from his home in Dallas, Texas. Jason Stolle joins us on the podcast. What a moment. How you doing, Stolle?
I'm doing great, Phil.
Man,
how's it going?
It's going real well. Man, we just had a great lunch over at the Dixie House, as we always do. Man, I already ate. Forgive me. I forgot we talked about lunch. You got in here at 1 o'clock. I ate a sandwich. So Stolle had to sit there and eat that chicken fried steak by himself. How'd it do?
It was very good, Phil. I'm a little surprised to you. After all the years on the road, I think you know what my diet has always been. A bland...
turkey sandwich.
Turkey sandwich.
Well, that's...
on wheat. Maybe, you know, some potato chips. And so after not seeing you for a couple years, I come over here, and where do you take me? You take me to get the...
Somewhere to get wrong.
The 8-pound chicken fried steak. Just get wrong on the fried, the batter, the fried meat.
It was
meat.
All there. That's right. But we don't have a show to play. We were just going to come here and sit on the couch and...
I understand.
Wax rhapsodic about our... what has been, what is now, and what will be. I wanted to get, Stolle, we've done some, we always get into Wilco a lot.
Yeah.
You search for a rock band in today's world who's doing something right that isn't right off the American Idol, just some sort of, you know, silly thing. You get the old dinosaurs out there, like, you know, the Stones and U2 and McCartney, whatever the guys we talk about. So, Wilco's that band, you know, they're just old enough to have some integrity, but they're not too old to be a dinosaur. And you know, they do some good rock shows. We did Sky Blue Sky, which I just loved.
Right.
I mean, you were always probably frustrated because I was kind of, it took me a while to come around on Wilco.
Yes.
Did it?
Very, very frustrated. Yes, but
I you see where I'm coming from.
No, I don't. But no, for years, you know, I endured some good-natured ribbing, if not just outright harassment from you and Ryan Lynch.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I was trying to do my
part. A couple of guys who just all they do is listen to, like, Led Zeppelin and the Beatles.
Right.
You know, I mean, just guys who don't warm to anything new very easily.
Right. And Wilco was the evolution. It was where a lot of that music had gone and where it was
no question.
Current. And I was trying to bring a little art, a little soul into the van. And you would have none of it. You would Lynch.
Not of Wilco, though, but you brought us Ben Queller. He was an instant hit.
Indeed.
He
was an instant Jayhawks, hit. Thank you very much.
Jayhawks was an instant hit. We've done several of their albums on the podcast, and we'll do many more.
Right.
But yeah, so I know you went to Wilco. So, man, I just always laughed about the Beatlesque. Some bands are Stones bands, some bands are Beatle bands, as the saying goes. Wilco is definitely a Beatles band. Not just a Beatles band. They're a Beatles White Album band, I always say. They just, I mean, it great sound. It just got that flavor to a lot of their stuff. And always very experimental. A lot of noise and stuff happening on some of their previous releases. I remember your dad, your hip dad, the great John Stolle. It is John, isn't it?
Correct.
Okay, I knew that. Yeah,
John Stolle.
John Stolle, himself a drummer.
Indeed.
Who's a big full band supporter and just a music aficionado in his own right.
No question.
I got an email forwarded to me, that was like a year ago. That wasn't too long ago.
I think it was Sky Blue Sky, actually.
Yeah. It was. And it said, I thought you'd get a kick out of this. Dolly emailed it to me and said, my dad was driving down the road and he keeps hearing this noise. He's checking out the new Wilco record on his iPod he keeps hearing this noise. Like, man, they're really getting experimental with that. And it wasn't until later he realized he was dragging his muffler or something.
That's right. He had to pull over and he looked under his car and realized that the bracket had fallen and he had been dragging his muffler.
And he said, man, I bet Wilco would be flattered to think that the sound of my car falling apart on the asphalt was actually part of their musical vision. I just accepted it as something on the. They're just reaching for something there.
Well, you and Lynch always like to talk about Wilco and their recording process, and you envision that essentially what they did is they went into an automobile factory, and to shut the place down for several days, and we're not allowed to take instruments musical instruments of any kind were allowed in the building.
Yeah, just with saws and clanking,
just welding and the
sparks
robot arms
flying around.
And then that was their new album. That was the end of it. Yeah,
Lynch was also troubled as I was. Your dad's obviously younger and hipper in the music ways than maybe Lynch and my dad, because. Lynch goes, man, I just couldn't get past the first line of that email of his dad saying, so I'm cruising down the road checking out the new Wilco record on my iPod.
Right.
Lynch
right.
is like, would your dad ever send you an email start off like that? I'm like, no, I don't think so. I don't think Phil Sr. would be.
Right.
You know, checking out the new Wilco on
his iPod. No, I'm very fortunate. I mean, my dad was a drummer and has been since he was a teenager and gets all the credit and a lot of the blame for the fact that I started
and rightly so.
To play music. Thanks a lot, Dad. But no, he was always a drummer, and of course, the minute I could walk and talk and see and hear, and watching him do that, that's what I wanted to do.
Did he have a kit set up like in the garage? Like, was there always a kit around the house kind of deal?
Yeah, and his band that they had practiced at his house.
Oh, okay.
So there was just always a music room. There was always one of the rooms in the house, no matter what house they lived in, was going to be the music room. So yeah, that was. I had a pretty hip dad, and so yes, he's a big Wilco supporter. He's been in and out. He's hated him. He's loved him. He's gone back and forth, as most people do.
I think so.
But you know, the thing about Wilco, you talk about being a Beatles guy,
right,
a Stones guy. Well, I've always really thought of myself as a Stones guy who just really appreciates the Beatles. Now, a lot of times, I take that side of the argument just to piss people off.
That's right. That's right.
If you really want to get into a fun conversation, just stand around a bunch of musicians and tell them the Beatles sucked.
Yeah, that's one of our favorite conversations as a topic of discussion is who's a band you're ashamed to say you like, a guilty pleasure, and then who's a band you're ashamed or to say you hate.
Right.
Just go, man, I think Led Zeppelin sucks. Yes. Like, you know, just never got into it.
Right. Steely Dan and Aerosmith for your record. Steely yeah. Dan is my guilty pleasure. And then, you know, a band that, I think a lot of people would give a lot of credit and merit and credence to.
Yeah.
But overall, just not one of the more popular bands in the history of music.
Yeah.
And then Aerosmith, which is just... largely popular. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
I'm with you on Aerosmith.
I apologize to any of you Aerosmith fans out there. But
no, there's not a lot there. There's a couple of good songs, and then just what they made 30 albums. Just
right.
Is any of this shit any good? And you right. start listening, like God, right. what's going on? They had their moments, you know. You'd be proud. Talk about coming around on something, dude. Steely Dan.
Yeah, come on. Come
dude,
on.
Man, I can't remember where. I think I went to the, someone had some Steely Dan CDs. We had some in the house. Someone had given me or something, and I'd listen to them. We got that cool, but I ended up putting them on my iPod just because I was in one of those.
Sure.
When I first got Mad Dash, just getting everything on there.
Right.
Hitting the shuffle, and man, a couple of those things kept coming on. Katie Lied and
you got,
Asia.
Brooklyn or
I got
My
Asia.
Old School or any of that old stuff.
Oh yeah, dude. Asia and Katie Lied.
Sure,
those are good albums, man.
Right, right.
So well recorded too.
Oh,
Wilco
those guys
aspires
are,
to
right,
sound like
right.
that.
What do you audiophiles? Right, oh, that's no what question. These guys are. There's no question that they are that. So Wilco, just to kind of bring it back to what we were talking about. Wilco for me is a Beatles band in the studio,
mm-hmm.
and they are a Stones band
live. Yeah,
and so when
so
you,
where did they fall the other night? You went to their show.
I went to the show at the Palladium.
Now you've seen them. How many times have you seen them?
Oh my gosh, maybe 9 or 10
times. Oh really? I was gonna say more than five. Yeah.
Yeah, more than five. I pretty much try to catch them every time I come in, and I'll start off the story or the review, the official
and
Wilco.
They come through about
review.
Every year, right?
They come through about once a year.
Okay.
Usually around the time of ACL, as a matter of fact.
Right, right. Heading up or down, right.
Festival, yeah. But I hate going to concerts.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you. I absolutely hate going to concerts.
Even if it's Wilco.
Wilco is the exception that typically gets me off the couch.
Right, right.
Out of the house. I think we were talking about this earlier. I think this just means that I'm old.
It's
not that I don't
on.
Appreciate music and
come
a good
on.
Live show, but... it's just a beating, Phil. It's
yeah,
a, it's an
it
absolute
is.
Beating. Whether it's parking,
and plus
see,
you
standing
you
in
and
line,
you're spoiled by yes. seeing a lot of great shows. We're backstage, where all the
yes.
the big leather couches are and the beer. And if we
right.
want to stand on the wings and
right,
you know that might turn me on to some band that I previously wouldn't have paid much attention to. But
yeah,
we're opening for them. They're opening for us. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty cool. But I'm backstage. I wouldn't want to be out there in the pit, you know.
No,
I wouldn't have paid to get
question.
In. You know?
No question. Where I come from in the music world is, yes, you're sitting, and nobody's going to want to hear this, but you're sitting backstage and someone is bringing you a beer.
That's right.
whereas you have to go seek it out. If
right.
you want a beer, if you want a drink.
And get your money.
You have to go seek it out. And it is an adventure. I mean, you got to be Indiana Jones. You just can't.
You got to go hunt.
You can't be nice. You got to
be a
hunter. Push your way through. So, yeah, I mean, in between the opening band and Wilco, I got into a fight.
What?
Well, yeah.
What do you mean you got into a fight?
I got into a fight. So I'm a little
like
embarrassed.
Like a fist fight or just a yelling deal?
Very close to fist fight. Luckily, just a yelling deal.
Oh,
but,
no.
You know, these general admission shows. Listen to me, people. General admission, I know that basically means, okay, everybody kind of every man for himself. But if I give 6 inches
yeah.
between me and the guy in front of me, 6 inches. That's the personal space. That's the sphere at a general admission show. 6 inches around the person in front of you. That is their sphere. That's their protection. That's the force field. Don't violate that.
I hope Ryan Lynch is listening right now because no one has a better feel for the sphere of personal space than Jason Stolle. Yeah, over the years, he was one to get unnerved when someone was just the close talker, the fan backstage just been overserved and just
yes.
I just go look at Stolle. Look
space.
At Stolle, he's just cringing over there talking to that guy. So you're at the Wilco, so your space was being invaded.
Yes,
at the Wilco show.
We had managed to get there pretty early, and we were there and saw, by the way, a really cool opening band called Liam Finn.
Yeah, I remember seeing the name.
He's a two. It's a two-man deal, and he often plays drums.
Liam Finn. That's Nail Finn's kid.
Is it?
Yes, dude.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Young. I mean, was he like mid-20s?
Yes, young, bearded.
F-I-N-N.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never researched it. I assume there's some connection to Neil Finn. But
right.
Anyway, really good show. But anyway, we got there early enough to get a good spot. We had worked our way up pretty far. Now, we weren't trying to push our way to the front
Who's
row.
Who's we now? You and your dad?
Me and my wife.
Okay.
So, we've managed to make ourselves, we've gotten our way pretty close to the front.
Right, right.
Anyway, I'm giving the guy in front of me the proper sphere of respect. Admission rules are in effect. I understand that. We're at that 6-inch mark. Well, yeah. I've given the guy 6 inches in front of me. And lo and behold, does the guy next to me, I mean, we're watching in the opening band. You want to talk about overserved. There's already a guy with his girlfriend. He's clearly overserved. He sees this 6-inch opening, and by God, he's gonna take it.
Oh, I see. Oh.
He's gonna take it. I've given that bit of space. He takes it. He and his girlfriend slide into this 6-inch.
Just wedge their way in between you and the guy in front of you.
Yes. While the opening band is still playing, and my wife and I are looking at each other just with that shocked look, like, is this really happening?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Could this be happening? There's no way that this is happening. Sure enough, it's happening. Well, I do the thing where I start talking really loud, saying things like, I don't know why they did that. I was just standing here and he got in front of me. Everyone knows the rule. It's 6 inches of personal space.
Well, that's no wonder you're going to get your ass kicked talking like that.
Yeah, of course. Well, of course.
See, I just put my head down and walked to the back of the venue.
I know. But it's my one concert a year, Phil.
That's right. I know. I hear you. I hear you. You got to stand your ground up there in the pit.
A little bit to a point, you know, and so I didn't know that the guy heard any of the things I was saying.
And of course,
as soon as the first band was over, he turns around, he's like, so you got a problem with this or whatever. So yes, I have a problem with it. I give my explanation. I'm Larry David all of a sudden from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I provided the necessary 6 inches.
I've given you a 6-inch sphere. Everyone knows six inches.
Yeah, exactly.
You exploited all 6 inches. When I'm behind another car, I give them the 2-second rule. You know, when I'm on the highway, don't come in here. Don't violate that because it's just not right.
So what happened is the guys are so voices are raised.
The women took over at that point and got in between us and they went away.
Right.
They decided to go seek out a beer.
So you stood your ground. You stood your ground.
I stood my ground.
Good for you.
The guy outweighed me by about 150 pounds. It was one of the dumb. Yeah. I flashed to a scene with me being dragged out by a couple of bouncers, having not seen Wilco, and trying to explain to my wife, you know, exactly what was going on in my head, you know, why it was worth it. So they take
the stage. So you're feeling refreshed. You survived this
my heart's beating a little fast.
A little faster.
A little adrenaline.
Right.
Now I'm ready for a rock show.
So Wilco comes out there. Now, is this the old Gillies?
This is the old Gillies.
That we played at.
Yes.
Like, is it set up the same, the
it
stage?
It is not set up the same because, you know, Gillies is still there, but it's much smaller. The Palladium is...
Where's the stage we played on?
Oh, boy.
It's just gone.
They totally reconfigured.
Okay.
Now the Palladium is just one giant black room, probably 4,000 or 5,000 people easily.
Okay.
A lot of the bars are still there because they were along the walls. But essentially the stage is totally different than what they had before. You might think differently, but I think they've totally reconfigured it. But it's in that same building.
Yeah.
So Wilco gets out there and they were awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you haven't seen Wilco, you need to go see him. I mean, I'm going to spend time on your podcast convincing people to be Wilco fans. But, I mean, just a great live show.
Yeah.
Early on, Tweedy, the lead singer, looks a little disinterested, looks kind of pissy. But that is always his kind of thing. He's always searching for something to happen, someone to yell at him from the crowd or throw something at him, something to really get him going. And apparently this night it was about the set list.
Right.
And after every song, someone from the crowd is shouting out the song they want him to play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at some point he just goes, listen, I've already written the set list. It's out here. It's been taped down by all the roadies. The set list is in front of me. It's in front of the drummer. It's in front of the bass player. These are the songs we're going to play. And here's what I did. I looked at the set list last time we were here. And we are going to play at least 50% new songs or songs we didn't play last time. And that's the deal. So he goes on this, I don't know,
yeah,
5 minute
on how to make a good set list.
How to make a good set list.
I could have learned something from that.
Right. Well, and so the crowd really, of course, this is how he gets the crowd behind him. Because now it's him and the crowd against this one jerk who's trying to tell him what songs to play.
Right.
So from that point on, it was just a great show. They played two encores. I mean, they played for 2.5 hours.
You know, the review in the Star Telegram said that he was funny and was interplaying with the crowd.
Right.
Well, I didn't really say whether he was kind of being pissy, but just that there was sort of
a band.
By the end of the show, a good feeling between band and fan.
Well, for some reason, there was some guy in the crowd that was wearing a metallic gold dress shirt. I mean, it was the ugliest thing I'd ever seen. And Tweety spotted him and made them put the spotlight on the guy. And this guy was just wearing it was the ugliest shirt you've ever seen. And so he makes a big deal out of it. And when it was all said and done, he actually trades shirts with the guy. So the guy comes up front and the guy gives him his gold lamé dress shirt. It's the most disgusting thing you've ever seen in your entire life. And Tweety gives him his old worn out like flannel. I'm sure it's, who knows what it smelled like. So he gets that.
He went shirtless on the stage?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then put on the gold shirt and wore that for the rest of the show. So
that's cool. That's
a
fun
running gag.
Yeah.
He was known many, many years ago as just being kind of a prick on stage.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I always believed it was just part of the act.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
out there and acting kind of mad and irritated, and then he was going to really put on a show once he got the crowd behind him. And he was always throwing out someone. There was always someone in the front of the crowd who supposedly threw a beer bottle at him or whatever.
Right.
And they'd toss that guy, and from that point on, everybody was having a great time.
Right.
So it was that kind of thing.
Kurt told a good story about there's a great DVD he did where he did the solo tour.
Yeah.
Where he calls somebody out in the crowd, or there's someone talking in the back.
Yes.
He said, man, there's like an uncomfortable 15 minutes of...
Right.
We did a podcast segment on how to handle the odd heckler.
Oh, the heckler.
You can see people responding to some guy in the crowd. But your guy Tweety's got this down.
No question.
In fact, he invites it, probably. It's probably part of the show.
I believe it is totally part of the show, because what happens is... He gets the crowd behind him, because now the crowd is sympathetic, empathetic, if you will.
He finds someone to direct
his
anger and frustration at, and then the show goes from there.
Without question. And then the crowd is behind him for the rest of the night. I mean, of course, they all pay $50 to see that. Oh,
yeah.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
He's a genius.
How's the new record? I haven't even heard it.
I've
heard some of it.
It's good.
I felt sorry for him trying to follow up Sky Blue Sky. Is this the next one right after that?
It is.
I was kind of like, man, the last one was so good. I don't know.
See, I think Sky Blue Sky was close to their best record ever. And this is what we were talking about offline a minute ago, was just how unfair it is for Wilco.
Mm-hmm.
Not that anybody really needs to feel sorry for those guys. They're doing okay.
Sure. Yeah, right.
but whether it be the live show or the studio album,
mm-hmm.
They're constantly having to outdo themselves.
Right.
You know, their competition is themselves. They're only competing with themselves. And so when you show up there and you pay your 20, 30 bucks or 50 bucks, whatever it is, to go see their show, you know, you're standing there demanding that they do as well as they did last time, if not better.
Right.
But what happened last time was the best show you've ever seen in your entire life.
Yeah.
So what kind of expectations are those? You know, it's the same thing with the record. You sit there and you go, wow, this is innovative. This is amazing. This is obviously a group of musical geniuses.
That's how
leaders.
That's how you turn into U2, you know. We just, after a while, you're just building buildings to take on the road. Just structures to travel with. Now we're gonna play Where the Streets Have No Name, suspended from midair. You know,
exactly.
Where it's turning somersaults or something. Just like, what? Yeah, what do you do for an encore?
Right.
Are they going to play on the moon? What are they? What's the next U2 show going to be?
Would it surprise you?
No, it wouldn't. The first band in space or something.
You constantly have to outdo yourself, and U2 is suffering from that a little bit. I mean, you know, we were just talking about All You Can't Leave Behind.
Yeah.
Great record, a large comeback album for them. And now what do you do? Now you've done that, now what do you do?
Well, we're going to continue here talking more about the concert experience, because we were talking about U2 and some things earlier. U2, a big topic. I think it's been on a couple podcasts, but there's a lot of press on the new tour. And man, I just feel this pressing. They're trying so hard or something to entertain us all or something. I don't know. It starts to be a little – I feel like we do talk about U2 a lot. But I think their situation therein speaks a lot to where music has been and where it may be headed and just people's attitudes towards it, you know. So we're going to get into much more with Jason Stolle on the podcast in our next segment. Next. I started thinking about the things I found. I started looking around. I started looking around. Yeah. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Email me, phil@philpritchard.com. Oh, man, what? You don't have the new album, Mark of the Human Hand? It's not even released yet, but you can get it right now at p2tunes.com for just $4. Or buy the drop card for $20. Every song I've ever recorded for $20, including the new album. You can't beat that. Well, man, our great friend, the legend himself, Jason Stolle, is here. The original full band drummer for several years. The guy who just, you know, we made Tougher Than the Rest. We'll talk about that a little bit later, making that album. The live record, High Tide in the Heartland. Recorded in a lot of different types of albums, a lot of different environments. Definitely traveling around. And really for me, it was kind of when I came back from Nashville, the first time I was out, you know, playing on the road as a man with a lot of sense of urgency. A lot of, you know, I had kids, and Stolle had moved to Dallas, and Lynch, and you know, we hit it really hard, you know, playing and stuff. So a lot of battles were fought on that front.
Well, let's get that story straight though, if you don't mind, real quick. I moved to Dallas after joining the full band.
That's right.
Specifically, as a direct result of joining the full band. And if you remember correctly, what you and our manager at the time, Troy Johnson,
the great Troy Johnson, yes,
did to me, and even Ryan Lynch, I think I can speak for him. You had come back from Nashville. You were ready to start playing gigs again in Texas.
Yeah.
And you called me and you said, I had done some fill-in gigs for you.
Yeah, right,
and
right,
and you
right.
called me and you said,
the great
listen.
Blind Luck.
Yeah, right.
First band, yeah.
Playing with Blind Luck and a couple other bands and did a couple of fill-in gigs for you. And you called me and said, guess what, man? We're going to Missouri. We've got a gig in Missouri. We got a gig in Oklahoma, Norman, I believe.
That's right.
And we're taking a bus.
Was that a bus. Yeah, that was like kind of like, and you just thought, I've made it. This is it.
No question.
Yeah, there's no question
right.
about it.
Right. So I
Oh my goodness,
yeah.
That's right.
So you guys just, you and Troy, you say, meet me in the parking lot of some hotel. I think it was, I don't remember where we were.
Yeah, I met him by the Renaissance there on
in Dallas.
Stemmons. Is it Stemmons? Over there
that's
by
right.
the...
Yeah, the big golf tee looking hotel.
Right.
So I'm just sitting there in the parking lot in my car, and here comes the bus.
The bus. You guys that just, was the, which one was that? That was the blue one. Wasn't it the first one we took? Just the big blue?
I think so.
We didn't have the horses
on the
side of
it. It was the nicest one that we, it was the nicest one of all the ones we've taken. But, I think that one had air conditioning.
It did.
But anyway, so you
and
pull
a VCR.
Up, right, right, and out walks Troy Johnson, followed by you, and just off we go. You just scoop me and Ryan Lynch up, and you just take me.
I tell you to choose a bunk. You know,
right.
There's some beer in the fridge, and
right.
Yeah, it's just there. Here we go.
Right.
Here we
poker
go.
Poker chips out
life,
on the table.
Life
just,
with Phil.
Right.
On the road.
Just a football game on one of the three TVs.
Oh, I'd forgotten about this routine. I'd forgotten about this.
Yeah. It was the scam of all scams.
Well, I think we were playing. Is that when you came back and played with Kreger? Like,
yeah, we finished it off with a fraternity party
in Austin.
Something. Yes. Go ahead.
The whole impetus I remember was we had a really good paying gig in Fulton, Missouri.
Correct.
We had a group of fans up there brought us up there. We were going to play there in Fulton, Missouri, and then the next day play in Austin at this big fraternity thing with Kreger.
Right. So we had to
and
get
so,
back.
Well, we were trying to, and Troy and I were trying to get airplane tickets and stuff, and he finally just goes, man. And this was like, there's a couple of big bus leasing. Y'all see the musicians out there in the buses and stuff. Well, this is kind of an older model Eagle that some guy had. And
Larry.
Yeah, Larry. He
wait, I think they're all named Larry.
They're all,
they all sorry, that didn't narrow it down at all.
They all live like on a farm outside of Houston, and they got the bus out there in the barn, just kind of. And so he picks us up, and the whole thing is with the beauty of the bus is it's a time machine. You play your show at Fulton, Missouri. You're off stage at 2 in the morning.
Sure.
You drink a little more. You get in a fight. Remember, there was a big fight that night.
We weren't in that.
Okay, so
we were there
fight.
When it happened, but we weren't
big
in.
Big fight, and you get back on the bus at 4 in the morning, and the bus just starts driving to Austin. Man, so we just sleep in our bunk. We wake up. Where were we? I don't know. Dallas.
Sure.
Hey, you know, get some coffee going.
Right.
Oh, it's wonderful. So that's the only way we made the show, you know.
Exactly, but it needs to be. So here's what you did. You split me and Ryan Lynch up.
Yeah.
You took me into the back of the bus, and Troy took Ryan to the front of the bus. And this is...
we need a commitment here.
Basically, yes.
Was that it?
It was like an interrogation.
Yeah.
It was like a NYPD blue. I'm back there, and you say, look, Ryan Lynch is in. Ryan Lynch is in. Are you in?
Your buddy's in the other room just saying he's in. He's in on this.
Are you in? And so
we're gonna get somebody else to ride the bus.
I was like, well, you know, Phil, I really want to play with you. I mean, this is something that's gonna be a lot of fun to do. But if Ryan's in, I guess I'm definitely in. Let's go do this thing. So yeah, 3 years later.
Right. See, this was the first. Ryan didn't know if he really wanted to play a lot.
Right.
You were in Austin.
Ryan was just now getting back into playing.
Right, right,
music.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was a desperate guy. I needed a band. We
yeah.
had gigs to play.
Right.
Troy was trying
right.
to get some things going.
Right.
That's right.
So then one
we
kind of
railroaded you guys.
Well, one night after a gig, about 3 years after that, Ryan and I are sitting in the hotel room just kind of reminiscing about how it all started and where we had come from. And we both had that realization moment. Just, wait a minute.
We were all.
You weren't in when he said you were in? I was in because you were in. So
I wasn't in. They said you were in.
So that's why I got in.
Sometimes that's how bands get formed, I guess. I didn't realize that's kind of how it's going down.
Sure.
I have heard it.
Yeah, right, right. Play along.
Oh, man,
you
know what? I think part of me knew this was as good as we're ever going to roll on this thing. You know, the bus, everything. We took a couple more buses after that.
I know.
Oh, man.
It's a funny story to tell. But anyway.
It is funny. Well, there's a lot of truth to it, more than a little bit,
right,
for sure.
Right.
We were traveling around. Oh, I mean, it was just this epic deal. And
just make sure you get your story straight there, buddy.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'd come back to Dallas. And
where you're from originally.
Where I'm from originally.
Moved back here, played, man, we just started hitting the van. Everyone always asks me about fans, you know. You and I were just talking, it's not interesting to us or whatever.
Right.
But people are always like, man, what do y'all talk about in the van? Or what do y'all do, you know? How do y'all drive for 12 hours? You know, drive from Amarillo to, you know, College Station for a gig in one day.
Right.
What are y'all doing? And, man, we did all kinds of just funny stuff. I mean, a lot of it was just sort of your run-of-the-mill. Of course, that was when the big card-playing poker craze was starting to come in.
Yes. Yes. When Jordan Powell years.
Jordan Powell, road manager.
Largely burned up playing a lot of poker.
We'd put a drum case in between the quad seating in the van.
Right.
I'd be driving, and I'd still play a hand. Now, we weren't playing like Hold'em then. We were playing like five-card draw.
No.
Deuce is wild.
Oh,
well, it got into Hold'em, but for a long time, it was just the five-card with the wild. We were just learning how to play. We're still just kind of like, man, is the flush beat a straight?
Right.
Yeah, a little bit. Weren't we for a long time?
I think we had it wrong for a long time.
Yeah, I think we did too. Wait a minute. Three of a kind of, yeah, just.
Right.
So we played a lot of cards. I remember having some big hands there with the.
Yeah, it was amazing how lucky you got when you were driving.
Yeah.
You would just rake it in. It was extremely dangerous.
It was probably pretty dangerous. Well, I just have my cards down, just glance down at them and keep driving.
Sure.
And I'd say, raise me, raise you two or whatever. And what did Lynch do? He's out. Okay.
I guarantee you there are people texting and talking on their cell phones while they listen to this right now. They're doing
just
far more dangerous driving than we were doing. But yeah, a lot of cards.
A lot of cards. And man, a lot of beer. Just a lot of beer.
Yeah.
My life before and after that era of the band has had remarkably less beer in it.
Yeah,
but it was such, we had the Budweiser deal.
Right.
I felt like I was kind of taking one for the team a bit. I said,
right.
Man, we're sponsored by Budweiser.
Right.
So just case upon case upon case would materialize at these
yes.
gigs, you know?
Yes.
And just, and it's like anything else. Just the more money you have, the more you spend. There's more beer laying around, the more you drink. We go back to the hotel and we play cards and.
Right.
Hang out and do all that stuff. But yeah, we always had like a couple cases of beer kind of piled up in the van or,
Well, when your van was stolen, as mad as I was about the equipment.
Right, right.
And I think, and even a couple of my Steely Dan CDs, if I remember correctly. I think
Is that right?
We didn't have iPods at the time.
No.
We were still listening to CDs. But if you remember, Budweiser had just replenished our stash in the van, and I think we lost
had,
a good two or three cases.
Oh, several cases. And Stolly had the quote after the van was stolen. Unfortunate incident we have visited many times on the podcast.
Oh, boy.
We did just play a festival. We had five or six cases of beer piled in there, and Stolly's cell phone was in the van. I think Stolly said something to the effect of, you said something like, man, that son of a bitch, He's calling his buddies on my cell phone. He's going, oh, do I have a bunch of vintage gear in the van? We got like eight cases of beer. I was like, man, that dude hit the jackpot.
He had no
idea.
Just
hit the jackpot.
Oh, man.
Hit the jackpot, man.
Right, right.
Oh. But, yeah, dude, then the it's almost a study in American time-wasting pop culture. The card playing. Poker
right.
wasn't on TV night and day on ESPN back
Not
then.
Not yet. It was just starting to be popular. Yeah.
It was coming in. We're all learning to play. The other thing that started to come in at that time, Sudoku.
Oh, yes.
Ah, Stolly, very highly intelligent, a great puzzle man, crosswords, Sudoku. I remember we played at Green Hall one time. We were backstage. All the bands are running around. You, me, and Lynch are at a table hunched over an evil level Sudoku.
Yep. Five star.
Five star. Yep. Just silently, all three of us staring at it for like 15 minutes.
At least.
And I was vaguely aware of people in the room kind of going, what are they doing?
Right.
What are they doing over there? I mean, they're playing a game. Of course, we're not doing anything. We're just staring. And all of a sudden, like Stolly would point at a blank square and go, that's a four. Me and Lynch would just go, what? What do you mean? What do you mean? Just... Right here, can't be a four, can't be a four, can't be a four. You got your 2, 3, 7, 8, 9, has to be a four. I'm like, good, nice. So we put a four down there.
And then the whole thing just falls.
It's pretty nerdy, really. We were kind of a nerdy band.
Oh.
You know?
That's all we
not
were.
Not as cool as we looked on the album covers and stuff.
No.
No.
Absolutely not. That was the work of a team of stylists and
photographers,
managers, and agents. If it were left up to us... there's no telling what we would look like. Yes, very nerdy thing. But, yeah, crosswords was my thing. That was
yeah.
a very easy way to kill time. I could only talk to you and Lynch for so many hours.
I remember one
day.
Time we drove a long way fighting over a caramel-topped dessert.
Yes.
Ending in N.
Yeah, a four-letter word.
Ending in N. Just
caramel-topped God. Dessert.
Could you say, we're just like, we got the N, wrote a cake? Like, no, it ends in an N.
Yeah.
It wasn't until about 8 hours later, I remember I came up with like a flan.
Yeah.
Flan was the answer.
Right.
I was so proud of that.
Yeah, I was irritated because it's not an English word. But
yeah.
those of you that
is that
do
the rule on some of those?
No, it's not. That's the thing.
But
crosswords, there are no rules. You know,
that's right.
if it's
that's
clever,
right.
it doesn't matter if it's
Now, the other question, Stolly question I get asked a lot is, man, and I couldn't remember. Someone asked me this the other night. Of course, for a long time, during this Luke Skywalker, Stolly come out from behind the drums, pound on the front of the drums to the great thrill of anyone there. And it rolled into this showpiece, man. Every show, there would just be guys down front waiting for it to happen. Waiting for it to happen. And Stolly, understandably, as it went on, started going, I can't keep doing this. It's predictable. You know, everyone knows it's going to happen. It's just, bad. Let's just not do it tonight.
Right.
And Lynch would just be looking at him like, dude, we got to do it, man.
Oh, man.
We got to do it. These guys are down there just screaming Skywalker between every song. And it always lived up. It was always a big moment. And I was like, man, when did y'all start doing that? Did y'all come up in rehearsals or something? Of course, we never rehearsed. We just played shows. I was like,
I think we had one rehearsal.
I couldn't remember the first few times we would have done that. I'm like, man, I couldn't remember. Does anything pop to mind to you?
Yes.
Where did it start?
Do you remember when the Blue Light decided to branch out and they were going to?
Oh no!
They were
going to
open.
Right?
Yeah, they were going to do it right.
Yeah, get some mahogany chairs.
Yeah, they were going to do it right in downtown Amarillo.
Yes, the Blue Light North.
So, you know, of course, we'd always played.
I'd forgotten a lot about the Blue Light North.
Right.
Tom, the owner of the Blue Light, Lubbock, very successful, started college. So he goes up hour and a half, 2 hours to Amarillo.
Right.
Right in the heart of downtown Amarillo.
It was right in downtown.
There really wasn't anything down there. It's kind of
not to speak of.
And buys or rents a corner.
Yep. I don't even know if it was a bar when he bought it.
I don't think so.
So, yeah, he opens the Blue Light North. Now, we'd always played for Arcadio over at the Golden Light.
Right, right.
And
still
so,
there,
yeah.
Arcadio.
So we were always kind of conflicted on what we're going to do. But anyway, we decided we're going to start playing the Blue Light. I think whoever was booking us at the time was booking some of the other acts there.
The new bar always pays a lot more than they should, probably,
yes.
And to get guys to come over. So we
no question. Well, I'm pretty sure we played there the first week it opened.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay. And
I want to say it was Halloween. There were a lot of people there.
You know what?
Something like that?
It was actually sparsely attended. It was a sparsely attended show.
Okay.
Okay. And so on this night, we got a little bit more experimental than the full band was known to get.
As we were wont to do.
Phil, I was bored.
Yeah.
Okay. let's call it what it was. I was truly, truly bored.
Were we playing Skywalker or was it another song?
We were playing Skywalker.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I mean, I don't know how long we'd been playing together.
I'm remembering all this now.
It was just one of those nights.
Yeah.
Okay. Where we just needed something to
stretch it out, like Tweety needing someone to yell at him in the crowd. We just had to do something to keep us going.
We kind of shifted to entertaining the few people that were there, to it being a little bit more important to entertain ourselves. So I thought if this would be a good gag if I just in the middle of Skywalker, which still had a pretty extensive jam section before this.
Right. Yeah.
Stuff started happening. And I got up and I started kind of playing the outsides of the cymbals, and I was just walking around the drums, and for whatever reason, it just hit me.
Yeah.
And the eight people that were there went crazy. And it was clear from that moment on that
you'd be doing it the rest of the shows.
Yes. Yeah. And some nights I had a flash that I was just going to be doing that when I was 80, and I just could only imagine what that would have looked like.
That's right. It was great.
So that
though,
was
man.
The beginning of it.
Yeah. Oh man. So Amarillo, golly, at the Blue Light. Now, long may it rest in peace.
Right.
It didn't. You know, I had to take, there was some weekend where Pete Cotney played up there, and we were loading out, this is my other memory from the Blue Light, we were loading out,
right.
Me and Pete were standing there, and we see this cop, I mean, all the way down with his lights on,
right.
Just going, just coming down the street. Now, this is downtown where the buildings are tall.
Sure.
So he's coming up, man, he's going to be going through a flashing red light.
You're right on the corner there. It's an intersection.
Yeah, it's an intersection. So you've got a flashing red light here going the way the cop's going. Now, the other way, there's just a flashing yellow light.
Oh, boy.
Like they have a yield.
Right.
But the cop's got his roof fired up. It's 2:30 in the morning. So he's just going to run through. And, dude, he gets this intersection. I mean, he's going fast.
Right.
And there's just some dude in a Honda Accord.
Unsuspecting.
And you couldn't see him. So he gets to this intersection, and this cop swerves to miss this other car.
Right.
Just, whoa, I mean, I'm standing right there, dude. And, yeah. I mean, it is just right out of the Blues Brothers. This cop just hits the curve, just airborne, and just goes crashing through a plate glass window like a wouldn't have been Bloomingdale's, but I mean, like something with like models in the
right,
like a I mean, just crash, just drove all the way into the store. I mean, just
right.
we're just standing there, dude, just crazy. Me and Pete went over there and we're like, "Are you all right?" This cop got out, you know.
Well, it's the same bar that we were playing there one night, and we were in between songs. I don't know if you remember this, but we were in between songs, and there was just this loud crash.
Oh yeah.
Just the loudest crash. I thought for sure your amp had fallen off or fallen off the stage or something had fallen. Like I was expecting to see like a big light bridge having it fallen on Lynch and just see Lynch's boots sticking out from underneath. But so he's fine. You're fine. And we look over and sure enough, these giant panes of glass that were on the front of the bar,
mm-hmm.
one of them was completely missing. We're just looking into the outside world. Just there's no
That's
more
right.
glass there. Completely shattered. And as it turns out, some guy had been thrown out of the bar
and hit his head.
And he banged his. He was so mad that while he was walking by the front of the club, he bangs his head up against the glass. And
yeah, there was some blood over there.
Right.
No,
right.
it was a mess.
So that prepares me for my discussion with my children as they get older when they're teenagers, and I'm going to say,
how do you know all this stuff, Dad?
Well, right.
Trust me.
I'm going to say to them, you know what happens after midnight.
Yeah.
Nothing good.
Especially in downtown.
Just stay
Amarillo.
Home. You don't need to be out late. Just stay home. And apparently,
so
downtown
true.
Amarillo has more. More.
Did you play? Did you play the? Were you on the? You were on the Ryan Leaf gig.
I was on the Ryan Leaf gig. The Ryan Leaf gig, is that what it's known as this day?
I mean, it wasn't Doug Holm there.
Yes. Yes,
Something
it was
crazy.
Doug Holm. Ryan Lynch was kicking himself for having missed this gig.
Some of y'all sports fans out there might appreciate this. The biggest bust, arguably, in the history of the NFL draft, Ryan Leaf, Washington State, San Diego Chargers. He just bottoms out, goes to the Cowboys.
I charge you to come up with a bigger bust.
Yeah, Ryan Leaf.
Come up with a bigger
anybody
one.
Watches the show football is Ryan Leaf. Well, they do this report on ESPN, and... he's about his life now, you know. And he was
sure.
a coach.
West Texas
he's
A&M.
He's since been fired for, like, some sort of drug deal or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Steroids
don't
or something.
Don't worry about that so much.
So, anyway, this is Canyon, Texas.
Yeah.
I just am aware of this. I see it advertised or something. We're playing the Golden Light. We're just kind of sharing some Amarillo stories.
Sure.
There's this guy. There's a pretty good night. There's some people there. And this guy's on the side of the stage just going, play Meet Me in Las Vegas. Damn it. Blah. And he's holding like a bottle of Jack Daniels. This is kind of place where you can like bring.
Yes. Beer in, but you can bring
can't bring
liquor
your,
in.
You can bring in liquor and like.
Beer and setups.
And a dog.
Place.
You can bring your dog or something. So there's like some dogs in there. And, you know, Lynch with his, Ryan Leaf with his bottle of a Jack Daniels.
And, well, we didn't know it was him at the time.
No. Yeah, he's just yelling at me. I go, who the hell is this guy? So we take a break, and he says, hey, man, this guy and this guy named a couple of Texas music guys. And I'm going, oh, yeah. He goes, I texted him. Check it out, man. That's what I just sent him. And he held up his phone, and it says, hey, I'm watching Phil play at the Golden Light. And then underneath it says Ryan Leaf, like he signs his own text messages or something.
Right.
I guess. So then I just kind of froze, and just I had this that little kind of whoosh, you know, that
yes.
You know, just the big zoom from across the room.
Right.
And the Canyon, Texas, the coaching.
Canyon, Texas is not far.
And I turned to look into the bloodshot, watering eyes of the biggest bust in the history of the NFL draft, who is obviously a big Pritchett fan.
He was the biggest fan in the room. I mean...
You know, I've heard Jack Ingram tell stories about how he and Troy Aikman went fishing or something. And,
okay.
And I'm like, here's our band. Who do we got?
Troy Aikman.
We got Leaf. Or, I don't know. You
that
know what
is
I mean?
Just not fair.
I don't know.
Wow.
Lynch ever tell you the time that he met Aikman when he was getting his oil changed? Troy Aikman?
Oh, that you're going to do very well at this?
Yeah,
charge him like $500
for
an oil change.
Like,
you're going to do really well at this, Troy.
This is going to work out well for you, Troy. He started laughing. But yeah, Ryan
he
Leaf
has since closed and sold that dealership.
Has he really?
Oh, yeah.
Troy Aikman Ford?
Yeah,
was it Chevy?
It was a Ryan Leaf-like bus.
Oh, was it really?
To be honest with you, yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Kind of well-chronicled car dealership before the economic
downturn. Is that right?
Oh,
wow,
yeah.
Aikman.
Oh, yeah. About a year ago or so, he
folded tent.
Shut her down.
Yeah. Troy Aikman Ford. Well, life's tough out there on those former athletes. You know?
I know.
It's kind of like, you know, Phil, what would you do if you quit the band? I'm like, I don't know. I just don't know what else I'd do. So I just go play at Woody's. I don't know. What else am I going to do? So for better or worse, that's the way it goes, man. Well, that is just a little walk down memory lane. End up in Amarillo there for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I just,
Ryan Leaf, Car Rex.
The origin of the Luke Skywalker
that's
bit.
That's right. Oh, we always stayed in that rough hotel up there.
Oh, wow.
Before the La Kiva, which...
The Five Seasons? No,
The fifth season.
Yes. Do you remember the time we stayed there and we walked out of our room and, of course, it was just out into the open air. It was a motel.
Yeah, right.
In the little courtyard there was just a burned-up mattress.
Yeah. There's just a mattress that had been set on fire. Yeah, it was just...
Just out there in the middle for
and then
all,
we went back like 6 months later
still
and we looked
there.
And it was just still there.
Yes. Yes. We stayed there.
But you know what? The bar, God bless him, Arcadio paid for the room. So
oh, my gosh.
So we always were like, hey, man, we don't care. So we always stay there.
Compared to some of the places we stayed.
But I remember leaving that bar, just putting on the Jayhawks, you know, rainy day music.
Right.
And just singing all the way back to the hotel. Just going to sleep in there, waking up.
Absolutely.
Having the long drive. We'd hit the coffee shop.
Roasters
over there by the Hastings.
Sure. Yep.
Get our coffee with our scarves and our sunglasses. Yeah. God, just looking cool.
You want to?
Then we just drive back 6 hours.
Small world, real quick.
Yeah.
My current boss, his brother-in-law owns Roasters.
You're kidding.
How crazy
are there
is
more?
That?
Lots of Roasters
Small
or just
world.
One?
There's just one, and then he owns a drip coffee over in Highland Park. Drip coffee.
Roasters in Amarillo.
Yeah.
Is owned by him.
Yep. Their family's from Amarillo, so just
okay.
I went there for years in my old job, and then the guy I work for now, his family owns that.
Wow.
Isn't that funny?
Small world, dude.
Very small.
That's kind of like the great Ryan Lynch story where he goes on a Lynch is always going on vacation with his parent with his parents or something.
Right.
You know.
A Caribbean trip or something.
Yeah,
right?
He's going on a cruise. He's always going on a cruise or
it's something.
Canoeing.
Somebody's getting married.
Canoeing
Jamaica.
With his dad or something.
Right.
Yeah, that's another one. That wedding that got canceled. That
the
poor
life
guy.
Of the Phil Pritchett bass player.
I just go. It just
you,
goes.
You need
forever.
A whole podcast on that.
I know.
We need
just
to get Lynch
here.
Out here to explain himself.
We do. All three of us can just sit here and just take each other to task.
Right.
Yeah, but Lynch, one of his proudest moments, he was just playing like blackjack on some boat somewhere, and some kid with a ball cap sits next to him, and Lynch is, you know, he's had like 3 scotches or something by like 10 in the morning, and Lynch finally turned, he goes, you know, I'm just trying to be friendly, I turn to the guy next to me, and he says, how you doing? I'm Ryan. And the guy just looks at him and goes, I know who you are, man. Lynch just kind of goes, he goes, at first I was scared, I go, really? And he goes, you're the bass player of the full band, dude. Lynch just goes, that's right. He goes, man, it was a proud moment for me, man. It was pretty cool. He was some kid that went to Tech or something.
Right,
you know, whatever.
Right.
Down with his parents.
Sure.
So, man, we got our, you know, shoot, man, has some of its advantages out there. Playing rock and roll. Well, speaking of playing rock and roll, we're going to get into the Pritchett iPod vault section here. Oh, when I came back from Nashville, I needed to make an album. I'd already rolled out the bus to convince Stolle and Lynch to be in the band. I just said, it's going to always be like this. National touring, buses, TVs, the whole deal. So, and I said, next thing we got to do is make a record. We got to record some songs. And, man, I didn't have a whole lot of songs. But somehow we congregate in Arlington, Texas, to record what would become Tougher Than the Rest. We'll look at that album next, Much Tougher.
Another night in another town, in another smoky place. Me and the band were sitting backstage, looking at the face of the lead singer
From the opening act who had just left the stage, I saw youthful greatness in his eyes despite his age. He said, take a picture, why don't you? Many others have done the same. For I was once called Elvis Presley, but now Jackson is my name. We sat there in silence as reality set in, and I had so many things to ask him, but I didn't know where to begin. God save the king. He said it's not as easy as it looks to live as royalty. God save the king. He said I never died, I was just tired of living in Tennessee.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. From Trinidad World Recording Studios, well, our good friend Jason Stolle is here, a man who left such an impact on the band, who just really built the foundation for all the songs that we play now. Recording Tougher Than the Rest at Patrick McGuire Recording. I knew about Patrick McGuire Recording Studio. He's still there in Arlington, Texas. He was like the only studio around that was affordable when my high school band started kind of playing.
Yes.
Like in the late 80s. We wanted to record a few songs. And, hey, there's this guy, Patrick. And Patrick's a fine Christian man. He, the Wes Cunningham, my friend, I think his church knew, maybe had done something out there. There's something like that. But that's where we went. And then I had done my first album, Phil World, there. And mixed Phil Comes Alive. But then Suburban Legends and Heritage Way, some of it were done elsewhere. So I hadn't been to Patrick in a long time. So we rolled back in there. I was glad to see the carpet was still the same. It was still brown shag carpet in there. He built that studio in like the early 80s or late 70s or something.
It was just the garage that it was he just converted,
in his,
right?
In his garage, in his house. And but he had like a real, he had a real board. You know, he had a board in there, good mics and stuff like that.
Right.
It's and definitely frustrating in some ways. There's just not a lot of there's not a lot of room element in there.
No,
it's very dead sounding.
Yeah, right.
The record what sticks out to me is just there's just no. And I was going through a phase here, big time, because I realized that other albums, including some of my own, kind of had this thin with a lot of psh, and just a lot of psh, and a lot of reverb. And I listen to those old Tom Petty albums or something. I go, man, it's just like breakdown. It's just got this. I go, man, there's nothing on the. There's no reverb on anything. Or,
right.
So yeah, I did have this unrealistic and probably stupid thing that I go, man, we're gonna go in here and we're just gonna make this thick, fat sounding album with no reverb.
Okay.
I had the songs, and that was kind of where it started.
Would have been nice to
and
know that going
it's
in.
Still there.
Okay.
I think Stolle was the drummer. I was putting tape all over his drums.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, what are you doing? I'm just kind of like, man, we should do that.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, when I do hear the snare roll on God Save the King, it sounds exactly like I wanted it to sound.
Well, that's good.
And it didn't, but you know what? It didn't lend itself to some of the other songs. I was probably like, well, in retrospect, you know, on some of these slower ballads, it would be nice to have a big ringing snare or something.
Right.
But
I brought two snare drums.
You know.
I brought two snare drums.
Now, you had there's a little bit of room back there you were in.
A tiny room.
Really small.
I mean,
carpeted, padded walls.
Yeah.
You know, pads.
If I remember correctly, there was a pulley system, and you guys would attach me to it and lift me up and over the drums and down onto my drum throne because there was no room to walk around the kit. But anyway, so I brought two snare drums. I only owned one.
Right.
It was a nice vintage metal snare.
Yeah, yeah.
Worth hundreds of dollars at least.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I brought my brother's toy snare drum.
Yeah.
That came from his toy kit. And it was purely a backup.
I remember that, yeah.
And it was probably worth about $10.
$10.
And that's the one you went with.
Yeah.
That's the one you chose. that much
Is that
I remember.
Right?
It's It's absolutely right. The funny thing,
I don't remember it to be like a toy drum.
Pretty much,
yeah.
Maybe on the line between toy and real instrument.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was my little brother. Of course, yeah. he was a drummer and still is to this day. it was like his very first snare drum ever. But it would not stay in tune for the entire length of the song.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you that care to do so, put your headphones on and listen to the drum at the beginning of the song and listen to it at the end of the song.
Yes, it starts to just waver.
It starts to waver
yeah,
a bit.
Yeah.
But it no doubt contributed to the overall sound and the flavor of the record. There's no question about it. I could have, you know, played a much better sounding snare drum, but I don't think it would have given it the same flavor. And any old record that you think is great is full of stories like that.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of weird how you get hung up on something. Well, because
right.
I, you know, I had the songs and I'd written some of them in Nashville, some of them here, and was excited about doing them. And I'd recorded at Patrick's before, and I felt like the snare was lost in the mix. I was just kind of like, gong gong. You know, I just go, man, this is no Highway to Hell. You know, so I don't know. Yeah, I kind of got hung up on that early on. And God, I still had my old Gretsch back then, guitar. Worst thing I ever did was trade that thing already.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. That's Tougher Than the Rest. That was your idea to hit those chords on the two.
On the off, yeah.
Yeah.
On the upbeat.
The one town.
Right. Sure.
And the one town.
It was very surf guitar.
Yes.
Sounding.
Oh, and I had Andrew Durfers, my old guitar player. He had that.
Doesn't the Gretsch live on with Reckless Kelly today?
You know what? I didn't get a chance to talk to. We played with Reckless the other night, and David Abeda, their guitar player. I traded my 64 Chet Atkins Tennessean Gretsch for a couple of amps that I needed. And at Austin Vintage Guitars, and then he bought it,
right?
And that's how
he adopted.
A lot of people think I sold it to him. I didn't.
Right.
So I hope he's happy with it. I remember we played with him in Huntsville that time.
Oh yeah.
And Abeda had it. He goes, "Yeah, man, I love that guitar. That's my guitar, dude." He's like, "Yeah, man, I bought it. It's my favorite guitar ever." I'm just like. Then he goes, man, I got it all.
Rub it in.
He goes, I got it all set up.
Yeah.
He goes, man, he said, there it is. It's like 10 feet. He goes, man, you want to pick it up and play it? I just kind of go, no. I just kind of stormed off. I had my Gretsch, and I played. Andrew Gerfers had this Vibrolux amp. This is a 60, got like a 65 Vibrolux. Can't believe he let me borrow it in retrospect. He's kind of a gear guy.
Sure.
Left-handed guitar guy. Remember him? Austin,
absolutely.
Nafziger.
A lot of left-handed, a lot of left-handed Andrews in your.
Indeed, in the past. So I had that amp, and my other.
Is Stu's real name Andrew by any chance?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
He is left-handed.
His middle name is maybe.
Right.
But Tougher Than the Rest. The other thing that sticks out is the Wurlitzer. Pat had that. Real Wurlitzer electric piano.
Yeah, Mexican restaurant.
Brought that out there, and that was kind of cool. I enjoyed playing that, and did that, and of course our friend Cody Canada came by to sing.
Yes,
Willin'.
In the bus,
which was a late addition, Willin', wasn't it?
Yes.
How did we get onto that song? I can't even remember.
That you pulled that out of your, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't think at that point we had even played it live.
No.
You just said I want to do this song, and you sent me the original version,
Little
Feet version, and
God, that is
you said learn it.
That's just
and we didn't even rehearse it.
Yeah.
We did have one rehearsal. You came to Austin, and we had one rehearsal. For the album.
Yeah.
Which just scared the heck out of me.
Where did we rehearse?
What was the name?
Oh, we did.
It was a rehearsal complex.
Over there off Lamar.
Oltorf and Lamar, South Austin. Don't remember the name of that place.
I can't remember it, but I remember that.
It was a real rehearsal place, at least.
We
went in there. You threw 12 songs at me and said, here you go. And lured the bus and the five-star hotels.
In the studio.
In the caviar in front of me. Yeah.
That's right.
Brought in the craft table, craft services. So I don't even remember how Cody, they were in town, and the bus just pulled down this residential street.
Yeah,
and parked
he jumped out.
He jumped out
just barefoot with his wife or something.
Right.
And the funny story there is he sang his verse. He goes, oh, we know that song, man. I was like, all right, cool. So he gets in there and. He goes, He goes, "Smell, I got some smell." Or, what's the first part? He goes, "What does he come in?" He goes, "I was out on the road late last night." And he says something like, "Some fucking Alice and every fucking hell." He drops some F bombs in there or something. I remember I was in the control room, like, looking at everybody. I was like, "What is that?" I kind of buzzed to hit the button there. I'm like, "Hey, man, what's with the F bombs, man?" He goes, "What, man?" He said, "Is that how it goes?" I go, "No, man, it just says, you know." He goes, "Oh, well, that's how Todd Snyder does it." I was like, "Well, man, let's stick to the script a little bit."
Right.
So we did that, and they weren't even they had the bus, I guess. Certainly not as ubiquitous as they would become in the Texas music scene.
No, that was the beginning.
I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that, man. People just, "Man, Cody Canada sang on your album." It was kind of an after. They played a lot of gigs with us.
Right.
A lot of people don't. A lot of people, it's hard for me to admit, but a lot of people, I mean, they're really, and he tells me this, it's true. The first time they ever played in Austin was opening for us at Lucy's.
Yeah.
First time they ever played in Dallas was opening for us at Poor David's.
Right.
And the first time they ever played in Fort Worth was opening for us at the Aardvark. Right. And those were their first three. Now, they did really good, like in Amarillo and Lubbock.
Sure.
At that time, but, you know, kind of up Oklahoma, further north. But so we kind of had people ask me how I know that. It was just tied in. So it's a natural thing. It wasn't like you're going to try to get him. I go, "Man, I'll just, if he's passing through town, he'll come do it." And
right.
So it worked out pretty cool. And
I hate the phrase, "You couldn't meet a nicer guy." I can't stand the phrase.
Right, right.
But it applies. And it speaks to the whole group.
Yeah, yeah.
Just an awesome group of guys. Very nice, very humble, very respectful of where you are and where they're from and what they've got going on. So
they were always a great to hang out with. We got to play a show with them recently up at the Flatland Jam, and great time with them. It's funny, man. I hadn't seen them in a few years or spent any significant time with them. So, man, you know Cody. I just go, "Man, I'm not going to whip
his ass." He may remember me.
Whip his ass. I don't know. They ended up playing on the stage with us, and we just jammed all night in front of the people who were still there, and it was, and it's amazing. And I couldn't believe how good they were, man. It was pretty eye-opening to me. Because they started out, they were kind of rough bar band type.
Sure.
But, man, you just realize you're on stage, everybody's got a guitar, and, man, everybody knows how to play.
Yeah.
Knocking on Heaven's Door and Along the Watchtower, and I Think I'm an All Right Guy. I mean, we just played about 30 songs. I mean, it's from the same thing.
Even if you suck when you start and you're not even that good, but someone discovers you and they make you into something.
Yeah.
You play 250 shows a year.
Yeah.
By accident, you're going to get pretty good.
That is. There's no doubt. It was great. Yeah, having him come in and sing was fun. I'd never done that. Had anybody, a special guest or something like that. So, luck it's made of that. But, man, so many of those songs just have survived from that album.
Yeah.
That was a big, looking back on it, if we hadn't have gotten those songs and you guys, and it'd be hard for me to have even kept playing music for a living, really. I mean,
in a way, were reinventing yourself. I mean, you certainly weren't starting over, but, having been in Nashville for a few years and then coming back, it was the timing was right.
Yeah.
It was a new band. It was a new record. It was a new group of songs. And, we played Snuff Machine.
Yeah, sure.
We played, some of the old Phil World songs, in large part because we had to fill 2 hours.
That's right, yeah.
You were still playing some of the songs, but Lynch and I really jumped on board with a lot of those new songs. We were somewhat part of the creation process studio.
Yeah.
I mean, the songs were largely written before we got there, but we certainly cultivated them live, and then the fans, of course, really seemed to adopt.
Yeah, I mean, there's any Pritchett fan will know Tougher Than the Rest and God Save the King always reside to this day, rather late in the set. And God Doesn't Make a Difference,
Playing Mexican Restaurant.
Yeah, oh yeah, we do that a lot. Written with our friend Max Stalling.
Max Stalling, yes.
The great Max Stalling, man. Well, oh man, Tougher Than the Rest, is the, and I wanted it to be orange because I didn't have an orange album. I already had a lot of albums by then. Some black and white albums, a green one. Yes. So then I wanted it to be orange.
Right.
And I was wearing that orange T-shirt.
On do you remember? Yeah, yeah. Do you remember what was going on when we were when we took that album photo in the city?
Oh,
of
yeah,
Houston?
Yeah, gay parade.
The gay parade was going on. We were at a Mexican restaurant.
For the cover album, yeah, for the cover, cover
so
shot.
So we were downtown Houston somewhere, and this gay parade breaks out. It's gay.
We're in the Montrose area.
Ah, okay.
It was the place
it's
is
a famous
Felix's. Is it Felix's?
Maybe it is Mexican Felix's. Yeah, yeah. Great Mexican restaurant. And if I remember correctly, Tom, I believe,
Tom
was
Warren,
the photographer's name at the time.
Photos.
Was doing his darndest to make sure he didn't pick up any background.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. If you'll notice, the album photo is very tight, and there's just a wall behind
that's
you.
That's right.
He was doing everything he could to not get the
The
background
everything else
of what was going
on
a lot of the activities of the day. But that was kind of a
yeah,
funny
it was cool.
Story.
We kind of sprung for the inside folding out thing.
Yeah.
With the photos and stuff, and
yep.
It came out rather cool, man. It was put all the lyrics, and that's the only album I think we've ever done with lyrics.
Left the bag of prunes at home for that.
Bag
album.
Of prunes at home,
yeah,
yes, indeed. We entered another chapter there.
the chips and salsa era, yeah.
And we're playing some pictures in the firehouse, just playing, you
sure.
know. I still
sure.
think about that every time I go to the firehouse. I was like, shit, you know.
Well, one of my favorite
here, you know?
Right. Well, one of my favorite songs from that album was one that I didn't even play on, and you brought it into the record basically done.
Oh yeah,
Dreams.
Of course, yes. We tried to do it.
We did our best, but no matter what we did, it did not sound as good as you had done it. I think you'd even recorded it in your studio in Nashville.
Yeah, I had a digital machine. Yeah, and I had that little drum loop that's
right.
one of my friends had.
Right.
And I did the guitars. It's pretty simple. And maybe that was just the part of it that worked.
Yeah.
And then I layered some vocals on. And
there was nothing we were going to do to make it better.
I wasn't about to say, hey, let's use this. And, you know, that gave me a lot of confidence producing because it's hard when you're in a room. And I'm listening to it going, man, I think that sounds good. Pretty great. You know, I'm like, I mean, I guess, well, you got to go to a real studio. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, well, I know. Yeah. So, right. I didn't have the confidence, you know, but McGuire kind of looked back at you guys and just said,
yeah.
Man, this is good like it is. You know, it's just sort of,
right.
We'll just master it with everything else. And
right.
if it's in, it's not like there's a big record skip when that song comes on.
Right.
It's got a, I enjoyed playing that song live, too. It's kind of a slow
yes.
one. It's hard to play live.
Right.
It's hard to play.
Right.
God, we have so many songs that are hard to play live that are slower feely, you know, just
I know. It's
how
part
it is.
Of the deal when you're trying to play live. People aren't there to hear the slow stuff.
That's
you
right.
Know?
You gotta get
but
2 hours.
But I think any true Pritchett fan worth his salt will tell you that that's one of his favorite songs. There's just no doubt
I
about
hope
it.
So.
And you
well,
could
thanks,
spend
man.
You could spend 20 podcasts on the idea of leave well enough alone. And that's exactly
right.
what we had to do there. And,
yeah, I think that's probably true.
And
yeah.
we all just looked around at each other and said, you know what? We can't make this any better than it is. Don't try. Leave it as it
yeah.
is. Leave well enough alone. And I think it came across, even though there's no real drums on that record. It,
right.
it wasn't necessary. And it seemed to fit right in with the with the flavor of the record.
It is, man. People that was a lot of people's favorite album
yeah.
at the time.
I mean, Woman to Me. I mean, that, to me, that's a great song. I'm, of course, not very
One we never play that never gets. I do it solo acoustic a lot, you know,
yeah.
but yeah, some of them are hard to work in. I don't think we ever played No Laughing Matter. That's kind of silly, you know.
Right, right.
Never
yeah.
did that one a whole lot. Never did Shelley.
Nope.
Although
nope.
a good song, some people like.
See, Shelley,
you know,
again, that's
sad,
another one of those great songs.
Sad, slow song.
but really tells a story. Of course, that's always been your thing, is the storytelling
yeah,
aspect.
Right.
You need to write you don't even need to write it. You've already written it. You need to put together the Phil Pritchett Greatest Hits Women album or Woman album.
So yes.
You've got Shelley.
About all the great
Alice,
women. That's right.
Yeah, Woman to Me. what was the song on High Tide? She Don't
oh,
Even
yeah.
Know the Real Me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you have all yeah. these songs about these women, these great stories that you need to just put that record together.
We need to, man. The Phil Pritchett, You'll have a greatest money. Hits, a greatest hits collection for each, for all the sexes.
For each genre.
Each genre. Well, that is our show for the week, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, you can get every Pritchett song ever. P2Tunes.com, $4 a piece for the album. Or call us, 817-733-5256. Come record in the studio. You're a lawyer and you wrote a couple songs, or you're some career musician looking to mix it up. We do it all. So give me a call, email me, philip@pritchett.com. Well, I can't thank our guest, Jason Stolle, enough for being here. Fans are going to be thrilled with this, man.
Sure.
Stolle.
Thank you.
The story of the Luke Skywalker stuff, all that entails, and looking back on Tougher Than the Rest. Really a turning point for the band, man, where we just really started getting out there playing a lot and added so many songs to the repertoire off of that record. Well, thanks so much, Stolle, for being here.
Absolutely.
This is Phil Pritchett, everybody, signing off on yet another podcast. Join us next week. Thanks for listening on philpritchett.com and radiofreetexas.org. Be good to each other out there.
How does it feel to make it is what everybody wants to know. And she doesn't want to tell the truth, so she smiles into the phone. She doesn't mention all the setbacks and the callbacks that never came through. She doesn't talk.